Hey, all you metalheads out there, welcome back to Metal Messiah Radio. I'm your host today, DJ Lovely Laura, and we have the man himself. He is live from Houston, Texas, the one and only James Rivera of the band Hellstar. I got the awesome opportunity to see these guys play live last month in December at Wrigley Theater in Fort Worth, Texas, and all I can say, what a badass show it was. Definitely the best band of the night. All right, so let's introduce the king of hell himself, Mr. James Rivera. Hey, James.
Hello. Hey, oh, you don't sound much like a king of hell, do I, huh?
Well, we know you just got back from Europe, James, so how you feeling? What was going on over there? What were you doing?
Oh, man, it was wonderful. I basically, it was primarily set to be a trip based around having the holidays in Europe for the first time in my life, you know, with the snow and all that stuff in Germany and Holland and... But at the same time, just because of my nature of how I am as a person in this business, I can never just completely take vacations. So I did, I arranged a few shows while I was there, so I always got to think business. And so I successfully had four shows based around all the holidays and basically all around the weekends, too. And one of them was with Paul Di'Anno, from former guy from Iron Maiden's. And that was killer. It was in Germany, and then I did another show a week later in another town in Germany, and then I did a big New Year's Eve show in Slovenia, where I'm very, very popular. I'm like Elvis there for some weird... And, yeah, but in the metal, I mean, even the people of the mayor, the city council people, they're all into metal. It's a...
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, you know what I think it is? I think that the majority of the population are, seems to be, the census is that people are like 50s and teenagers, and that's like the biggest part of the population, and anybody from like early 50s and all 40s, they're all metalheads.
Right.
So their kids are metalheads, and that's why there's so much damn metal in Slovenia, I guess. And, yeah, that was good, and then we ended it in Eindhoven, Holland, before I came home and had another show there.
Well, it's great to have you back. I'm glad that you contacted me because I was so excited to get you on the show. Seeing you guys play live, I was just blown away. You guys really kicked ass that night.
Oh, well, thank you. That's kind of what we try to do. All that. That's our goal most of the time. But then again, you know, we always try to tell people so that we don't sound, you know, so that we don't sound so modest as that, hey, after 27 years, we better kick ass. It's like, you know, why are we doing this?
Exactly. So I wanted to talk to you about your early beginnings and how you got started with singing, and when did you know that you were going to become a singer?
Well, if my mom was alive and you can ask her that question, she would say since I was five. I guess that's kind of where it started as a kid, listening to the Beatles and singing in front of a lamp because I thought it was a microphone, I guess. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I started noticing it early ages, and then I went through a phase where I was really into movies, wanted to be a movie star, you know, James Bond and Clooney.
Really?
Yeah, I was a big James Bond fan, and I used to even wear a suit to school and that kind of stuff, and, you know, I went through weird phases as a kid, and... And my mom went and bought me a poncho so I could be Clint Eastwood for 1 year.
Oh, my God, how funny.
Yeah, a couple of crazy things that, you know, that I did as a kid, and, you know, it makes sense. And then I think when I got older and then Alice Cooper started making waves in the music world, it's where the combination of an actor and a singer caught my attention because that's what he was doing. And I think once I got involved with listening to him a lot and earlier metal bands back then I think my whole attention shifted more towards music again, and then I started singing a lot, I guess, in cars or in hallways or wherever.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I was out of school and I actually picked up my first microphone at a get-together at a garage party with some band playing, and that's kind of how it started.
How cool. Now, did you never took any vocal training at all?
I did after the first record, after the very first record, Burning Star. I did take lessons because I was basically training myself, and I think most of it was just naturally born, given to me. So as I started singing in different little local bands, garage bands, and then finally into the realm of recording a record with Hellstar, which is my first album to ever record. And of course, we did a demo first. I think what happened was I was singing more what I thought was right, but I wasn't doing what was proper for my vocal cords. So when I started having problems with losing my voice, I ran into a friend of mine that he knew of a vocal trainer that did stuff outside of her realm, which she was the Houston opera trainer. Mm-hmm. And he was a big fan of the band, and he took the album to her and gave the album to her. And he gave her my number. She called me up, and she said, well, I got your record, and, you know, Hector says you're interested in vocal lessons and this and that. And I go, yeah. She goes, well, I'm sorry, there's not much more I can teach you. And I thought what she was saying was, you're so horrible. That, you know?
Yeah.
She goes, because you have an incredible voice. The only thing I can teach you is how to use it properly.
Wow.
I was like, oh, yeah, my stomach just, I almost fell over. She goes, so when would you like to start? And that's how it started. So I took lessons from her for about 3 months, and she set me free like a little bird and said, "You go do your thing, because this is as far as I can take you now."
It is. It is so powerful. I mean, it just blew me away. I'm sure a lot of people tell you that you remind them a lot of Ronnie James Dio. I saw you with some pictures with him as well. You got to meet him. Was he a big influence to you growing up?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, that's Daddy right there. I mean, you know, he was probably my biggest influence. But, you know, then again, to not be completely untruthful, Klaus Meine was a big influence to me, even before Dio. But that's because I think I got into the Scorpions at a very early stage when they were very underground. I was very fortunate that I was raised in California. I was raised in L.A., which is where I went to high school, and ended up hanging out with I got lucky to hang around with that one little circle of guys that are way advanced than everybody else. You know, they smoked the better weed than everybody. Of course, I didn't, but you know, they did. And they discovered the stuff that was European that was going to hit big one day.
Right.
And just no one knew it because everybody was wrapped into Aerosmith, Boston, and Ted Nugent. And these guys were into UFO and Scorpions and Rainbow. And I'm like, I never heard of this stuff. And back then, it just sounded so heavy and dark.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was like, I used to say, man, this is end of the world music. You know? And then you think, wow, we'll try to compare that to Morbid Angel now, you know. So, but the earlier Scorpions, yeah, I used to love Taken by Force, and then it was really Klaus that actually inspired me to actually pick up a microphone and want to sing.
Awesome.
Once Dio became more popular with the Sabbath, when he joined with Heaven and Hell, just his whole persona on stage, his whole everything is what stole me away completely.
Right, yeah, Scorpion's definitely one of my favorites as well. All right, so you grew up in L.A. How did you end up based over here in Houston, Texas?
Well, I'm from here.
Okay.
So what it is my older sister raised me in L.A. She basically had moved to Holland for a while. And I was going to move to Holland when I was 8 with her, actually. And I would have got, see, then, no telling what my life would have been like, because I was raised in Europe. And I would have been, who knows what could have happened then. But then she had my first niece, which is always now, like, I always give my niece shit about it and go, you ruined my life because I could have moved to Holland. And, you know, who knows, maybe I would have sang for Scorpions or something, you know. So, but I always tease her. But, but she ended up moving back to the States, moved to California in the early 70s, and she kind of raised me a lot back since I was a baby, even though I still had my mom and dad. And once she got back there, she got this wild hair up her butt and said, you know, I want James to move out here and let me raise him out here, which in a way she did the right thing because, unfortunately, I was raised in the barrio. And I'm talking like you know, in Houston, you couldn't be raised in any worse barrio that there is. And fortunately, I never got into trouble like all my other friends. Like I said, James Bond and Clint Eastwood were my heroes. So instead of worrying about how to break into the elementary school and steal whatever they could, I was going to the movies.
Hmm.
And,
you know,
she moved me to L.A., and I ended up going out to school there and graduating from high school. Then I came back to Houston. So that's how I ended up in L.A.
Hmm. You know, James, you seem like you're nothing but trouble to me.
Yeah, I am now because I never got into it when I was a kid. So now I'm making up for that. And you know what? I think that's kind of what happened. I got into most of my trouble in my mid-30s. And I was like, why, you know, what's going on in my life? Why am I screwing up so much? It's because I lived such a clean life as a kid.
All right, let's talk about the new album. You guys, I guess, have already started recording this. Is the album available out now, The King of Hell?
Yes, it has been out. It's been out over a year now. It's becoming a little harder to find because, unfortunately for us, it was probably one of the greatest achievements that Hellstar has done since the beginning of time. But we're signed to AFM Worldwide, which is based out of Germany, which is a pretty large label. Unfortunately, at the time, their U.S. Partner distribution was a label called Locomotive. And Locomotive folded last year,
Okay. Actually
right after the record came out. So we were the last thing that they put out, and then they closed, and that was it. They were gone. But with that happening, then there went all the promotion. There went anything they could have did more for this record to get more attention.
Right.
But the rumor has it that AFM once has opened, they're going to be opening their own offices, and that it is one that is up for a re-release with the proper promotion. And we told them that, you know, that's the least you owe us. That you'd be smart to do that anyways.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is Sakis, one of your fans from Rock Pages, is in Greece, and he was asking about the recordings and also asking about the rumor about you doing another album with Seven Witches. What's going on with that?
Well, I was. And, you know, the thing is this could, we don't know what's going on. And there's no sense of me not being completely honest with this, but Jack Frost has completely, like, lost his mind. So he's basically gone to, like, now he doesn't want to do anything with metal. He's told anti-metal. He wants to cut his hair and do, he's into, I can't even tell you the names of these bands because I don't listen to them, but Nickelback, you know, I know that's one of the big superstars. Well, you know how in every genre there's one big superstar and then there's like a trillion little coattails underneath this one band, but they all kind of sound the same.
Right.
So whatever those bands are, they're on Nickelback's coattails. That's his dream now. So it's kind of like been a waste of time for us that got involved with the Witches project again, because, you know, now he's decided he doesn't really want to do metal. And I think what it is he just doesn't want to conform to writing a real metal record again. He's into writing a lot of this bluesy, Zakk Wylde kind of stuff. And I guess he sees that I'm going, we need to do another Mental Messiah, you know, we need to go back to, you know, this and that. And so he sees it as maybe we're pulling at each other and not agreeing with the music anymore.
Right.
He's a great guy. I love him. He's my brother. You know, I just got to slap him around and go, dude, you know, we need to figure out what's going on because people are asking,
yeah,
you know, is there going to be another Witches record? And,
right,
you know, it balls in his court. It's his world. I'm just in it, you know, so... Other than that, I mean, yeah, we did manage to create four new killer songs, and if it doesn't go any further, unfortunately, there'll be four killer songs that no one will ever hear.
All right. Also, bass player Caesar had a question for you the other day. He didn't get to tune in for the show today. He's at work. He's actually the newest member to the band Magistral. You probably know those guys.
Yeah, they're from Houston. Well, they're actually from Chile, but I mean, I know. I haven't seen them around in a while.
So they want to know what's going on, or Season wants to know what's going on, or what you thought about the Rock the Bayou over there in Houston.
Well, unfortunately, it was a disaster. I mean, I think what happened is there's too much, okay, there's already the Oak Rocklahoma thing, okay, and it's based on 80s hair bands.
Right.
Then you have the one in San Antonio that happened, and the only difference that they did was throw Queensryche on it that gave it a little bit more of a metal-type thing, but still revived, South Texas still revolved around 80s hair metal bands. Now, all of a sudden, this Rock the Bayou decides, we're going to do a big thing like that, and it's like, here we go again with the 80s hair metal bands, and I'm going, you know, if those guys were smart, if they would have did Anthrax, Megadeth, Testament, you know, and of course we were on it, Hellstar, Overkill, I mean, and go for a real metal thing, I think it would succeed. But I don't understand why they tend to just cling on to the 80s hair metal. And I'm going like, you know, it wasn't my genre, so I won't badmouth any of those bands.
Yeah.
No, I never listen to that stuff ever, never will. Funny thing is I'm going, they don't even have hair anymore. So, I mean, I don't really see what the big deal is about. And unfortunately, more than 50% of those bands world can't even perform anymore. They go up there and they make idiots out of themselves, drunk, falling off stages, and they don't care because they made it all in the day. So I think that by the time that Rock the Bayou came around, I think people were like, oh, I'm not going to go see that crap again. You know, I mean, it was already to that point where, like, I already went to Rocklahoma. I already went to South Texas.
Yeah.
You know, so why do I want to see this again? You know, and I think that that's what happened with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it could have been better and it could have been bigger. And I think that the problem is that someone needs to have the audacity. If I had the money, I have the audacity, trust me. If I had the money, I would put on the same event. And it would have headliners like Judas Priest and Slayer, and it would just be a full, I mean, I'd have King Diamond on it. I don't care what it cost. If I had all the money in the world, because I guarantee you I'd make it back.
Right.
And that's the honest to God truth. If someone did something like that, it would be huger than huge.
Well, you know, I love the 80s. I love all that glam stuff. I grew up in that era. I was in L.A. back in 1985. But I'm also a big Thrasher and the Metallica. I didn't like the grunge. Yeah, I didn't like that too much.
Well,
but
I didn't like that either. But, I mean, no. I mean, back then, of course, they were what they were. And I think the problem is a lot of them can't be what they used to be. That's what I meant. It's like they were horrible all their lives. I mean, they had, all those bands had tons and tons of success.
Right.
They weren't good bands and had a good persona back then, they wouldn't have got there. But I think the problem is trying to still be that is what I'm starting to see is, like, it's not working for some of them. Some of them are having success at it, but others aren't.
Right, that's what you're saying. All right, well, let's talk about the tribute band that you're doing as well. I know that you guys are going to be playing on January 30th at the Woodlands in Woodlands, Texas, at 19 Hole Grill and Bar. The Sabbath, Judas Sabbath. What's going on with that? I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, aren't you coming down for that?
Where is the Woodlands?
Well, once you get to the Woodlands, then it's only 3 hours from here, even that, 2.5 now.
from where I'm at, over in Dallas?
Yeah, not that far.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Sabbath, Judas Sabbath was something that I incorporated a couple of years ago, and it started off with two different tributes that I had. One was called Children of the Grave, a tribute to Black Sabbath, and then the other one was called Metal Gods, a tribute to Judas Priest. Then in between running around with Seven Witches and Hellstar and many things going on, I said, okay, now this is just too much now. This is like being a fat man who's going like all this food. So I narrowed it down to one act between the two bands.
All right.
Sabbath, Judas, Sabbath. Well, with the band, it ended up because of the connections and people I know in different parts of the country and places that I've lived, and I started different chapters of Sabbath, Judas, Sabbath. So now it's grown to where there's four different chapters in America and one now in Europe. Now, the one in Europe is the one that's actually blowing up bigger than hell right now because people have waited to see it for so long, and to them, tribute bands really aren't that. They're just kind of like, eh, whatever. But it's because it's me and I'm doing it, and so basically, I'm kind of going in with the angle of, the tribute band promoter buyers, but then also the buyers that just buy James Rivera shows like Hellstar and anything else. So every show was completely packed and a success. The ones I just did in Christmas.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, they led to so much success that the big festival that's called the Rock Hard Festival in Germany, the main guy was at the Sabbath Judas Sabbath show. He hasn't given me a complete confirmation, but what God says, God wants, God gets, and God says Sabbath Judas Sabbath is going to be a Rock Hard Festival.
Awesome.
Oh, and several people told me that night, that he had said that already. So I'm going, wow, he really liked it that much. And it turned into a situation where management now wants to take it over, and people are seeing this as an angle for me to tour Europe constantly in between Hellstar Records without sitting around here for months doing nothing. And that's kind of what it is. It's, you know, it's basically a tribute to Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, mainly the Dio years. We do throw in some of the Ozzy stuff that was at least on the Live Evil record that Dio sang on. And they're definitely the songs that are just so popular that people would probably throw a beer bottle if you didn't, you know, if you just don't do War Pigs and I'd be caught, you know what, you're in trouble.
That's true. Well, or Trashed. I love Trashed.
Yeah, and on June 30th, the Houston chapter will play, and the exciting news about the Houston chapter is it has been revamped. It was the same lineup for 5 years and the same songs. That's why things kind of had to kind of, you know, okay, we got to kind of pick the pace up here. Kept the rhythm section, and now who's been recruited into Sabbath, Judas Sabbath, Houston, is Larry Berrigan from Hellstar himself. And Eric Halpern, who was in Hellstar for plenty of occasions, also wrote the Distant Thunder record with me, the band Distant Thunder, and is in the Queensryche tribute, Mindcrime. So he's a guy that kicks a lot of mud around here in the Houston area. Very professional guy, so the band has really moved up a notch. So people are really excited about seeing this SJS now.
Very cool. Tell us the lineup now that's in Hellstar, your band members. Tell us a little bit about them real quick.
Well, you got Larry Berrigan, the founding member, along with me, we've been together since day one. We've got Rob Trevino, who was on the Remnants of War album, and then now back since 3 years ago. And then we've got Jerry Abarca, who's been around since the Remnants of War record as well. And then we have Mikey Lewis, who was in one of my Hellstar reunions back in 2003, I believe. And we did a small tour in Europe and went to headline the Keep It True Festival. Known him for a long time, been a big fan. Awesome drummer, which you saw Mikey play. And
yes, he's awesome.
Oh, he's amazing, and that's the lineup now.
Very cool. You know, the listeners over here, we have some fans in the chat room. They're having a lot of fun showing me all these younger pictures of you, James.
They all want to give me hell about my bird haircut.
Yeah, that looks like the 80s little perm haircut, you know, where it was a little bit shorter on top and then longer in the back.
Yeah.
All right, so how can people get a hold of the new album? Where can they go now? There's got to be somewhere they can pick this up.
I think it's still pretty much easily found online. I know it is. As a matter of fact, I think that Target still has it, and what other main store had it that was kind of impressive that when it came out? Yeah, Best Buy, and of course, you know, these people that tell you this stuff, they pat you on the back, and you're going, yeah, but it's online. You know, it'd be nice if I saw it in Target in the store. I was just in Target the other day. I mean, once that happens, then we know, maybe the Slovenians are taking over America. There was Hellstar in Target now. But, it's pretty much still easily found, I think, online. I haven't looked in a while, but I know that it was in some places it was.
All right, well, say something to all the fans real quick that tuned in, and I also want you to give them the MySpace address. And I tried to go over to your website. I'm not sure if it's working. It didn't work for me. Is that working?
No, the James Rivera website?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's being under construction again.
Okay.
I've got new people taking it over and stuff like that. But anyways, for all you guys that were listening, appreciate you tuning in, and hope that I gave you guys some information that was, you know, more than average or just your typical different interview about, you know, music stuff. And at least you know now that that's okay if you want to tell people that, you know, can you believe that James, when he was 10, he went to school and he pretended to be James and he wore a suit. And then the year after, he thought he was Clint Eastwood. I'm fine with that.
All right, very cool, James. It's so great having you. I appreciate just your humbleness. It was so cool to meet you out at the show. You were just so cool, so fun. We went and did some shots, hung out. You told me you were going to Europe, and you called me as soon as you got back. So I do appreciate you just being very on keen with that. I appreciate you so much for that.
Oh, no problem. No, it was my pleasure.
All right, well, let's get some shout-outs before I let you go because I didn't get to get them from you yet, so I'm going to make you do it live on the air.
Okay, well, hey, that's fine. And that's what kind of sucks because if you can't screw up, I guess.
Well, no, you can screw it, but I'll just say take two.
Oh, okay. And it's going to embarrass me for all the listeners. That's what I get for not calling.
Exactly.
That's okay.
All right. Well, the first one I'm going to get you to do is one from my show. So basically, you're just going to say, hey, this is singer James Rivera from Hellstar. You're listening to DJ Lovely Laura on Metal Messiah Radio.
Okay. You know what? Can I cheat a little bit and write this down?
Sure.
Okay. Well, let me at least do that much then.
All right.
I just want to get the... Okay, so what we got here? We got DJ Lovely Laura. I know that much. She is, by the way, listeners, if you haven't seen her.
Oh, thank you, James.
Hey, I watched a lot of James Bond movies.
And who was banging their head the most out at Wrigley Theater, James?
I'll take that stirred, not shaken. All right, let's see. DJ Lovely Laura. on Metal Messiah Radio, right?
Right.
Metal
Messiah Radio, right.
Yeah, I'm thinking of my song from Witches.
All right, so basically this is singer James Rivera of Hellstar. You're listening to DJ Lovey Laura on Metal Messiah Radio. I'll tell you when to go. Get your metal voice ready. You might even throw in a scream after it. That would be cool.
I'll try not to sound like such a nice guy. These people are going, I thought this was the king of hell. I didn't know Satan sounds so nice. Yeah, he is. He's really, look, I'm sorry that you have to burn it, you know, for eternity, but, you know, dude, I don't know what to tell you. You've kind of screwed up there. Okay.
All right, you ready, James? I'll tell you when to go. All right, go.
Hi, this is James Rivera, the voice of Hellstar, and you're listening to DJ Lovely Laura on Metal Messiah Radio.
All right, let's do another one just for Metal Messiah Radio. Just take my name out of it.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Go.
Hi, this is James Rivera, the voice of Hellstar, the king of hell, and you are listening to Metal Messiah Radio.
All right, very cool. Now I have to sweet talk you into one more for one of the DJs because he was really, really wanting me to get one for him tonight. Is that okay with you, James?
Yeah. Who's he?
DJ Dave Softy. He does the Metal Meltdown tonight from 6 to 11, and he's going to do a special promo of Hellstar tonight for me.
Okay, David Saucy?
It's Dave Softy, and it is the Metal Meltdown show.
Yeah, what is the last name again? Spell it.
S-O-F-T-E.
Oh, Softy, like Mr. Softy the ice cream.
Yeah, he actually does that, too.
Oh, okay, yeah, Mr. Softy. Okay. Okay, so here we go. Ready?
Go.
This is James, the voice. Oh, let's start over again.
All right, wait. Go.
Yeah, I got to say my last name. I'm proud of it, even though I'm not related to Geraldo.
All right, go, James.
You ready?
Go.
This is James Rivera, the voice of Hellstar, and you're listening to the ice cream man, David Softy, on Metal Messiah Radio.
All right, very cool. He's really going to like that. I do appreciate you doing that. All right, James. It's
Softy was the truck I used to run after all the time, and the guy used to hand out these little Christian pamphlets.
Isn't that just metal? He does his Softy thing when the weather's warm, and then he comes back and does his DJ, the Metal Meltdown with us over here. So I just think that's so metal.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, cool. Well, yeah, well, anyways, I guess we'll stay in touch. You know, I mean, yeah, you should consider that coming down for that show. You know, I don't know if you can or not, but...
Well, I'll see what I can do, for sure, definitely. Hold on just one second, James. Thanks for sticking around with us. Just give me one second, all right?
Okay.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I hope you guys enjoyed the live interview that we did today with the incredible King of Hell himself, lead vocalist James Rivera of the band Hellstar. Pick up their brand new album, The King of Hell, at any local of your stores around. And also go check out the MySpace page over there at myspace.com/Hellstar or go to myspace.com/James Rivera. All right, you guys, let's kick it with some more Hellstar. This is Evil Rain.